Thought I'd sit down. I'd stand up, but I'd pass out. People look funny when you do that, you know. God, don't you love AA? Only people in the world that'll go to any length to get what they don't know they have, but they know they've got it. Couldn't sell that too well, could you? What do you think? Well, there's nothing to read. I brought my notes. I'd like to thank Donna and the committee. It's really been great. God, I had a room. It's got bed and bathroom all in the same place. And even had ice in there, but nothing else. So I had water on the rocks. And Jim really has been great. You know, you had a scattered shower for me, and he did great. And it's good to see some friends that I've seen before that are still friends. You know, some of them quit you. Find out who you are. And then, fortunately, some are sick enough to never find out. So we're all right. I'm Jim Williams. I'm an alcoholic. What's that deal where you have to have sex all the time? Codependency. God. Wonder why in the hell I didn't think about that. If I'd have thought about that, I'd have had my deal going and I'd just sent one of my boys up here to handle that. Handle this little deal. Wouldn't that have been wonderful? Isn't that amazing? Chuck Chamberlain, years ago, came by Dallas saying, "What controls you?" Codependency, for God's sakes. Right there, God told me, and I just didn't think what how rich I'd be if I started in that stuff. About 12 years ago. Wouldn't that have been something else? You think we're not smart? Listen, they're going to come after us. We're the smart folks. We go to Hazleton, tell them how we are. They write it down, put it in a book, and we buy it because we identify with it. We got it, Abraham. We're the brains of the world. And what's that deal? Malfunction. Dysfunctional. God. Well, I'll guarantee you one thing. I've never been dysfunctional, have you? I don't know what kind of function I was having, but I was having a lot of it. I'll guarantee you that. I had no idea that people's parents raised them to be alcoholics. That's unbelievable. God, I wished I'd had parents like that. I could have started drinking a lot earlier. Hell, my parents raised me to be a Southern Baptist, for God's sakes. You know, that's the real Baptist. We're the ones that pray for the Catholics. You know, they drink, you know. Episcopalians, they just got tired of being Catholic. Presbyterians, they knew it was going to happen. And the Methodists, they just didn't like water. I think I'd like to have been a Lutheran. They believed in doing everything just a little bit. I was raised in a dry county, and Texas got lots of dry counties, which means we don't do nothing. We don't sell it, you can't buy it, and don't think about it. It was a bad, they're bad deals. Got a guy standing there for just like me, said, "If you think it, you might as well have done it." Hell, I knew I must be thinking it before I even knew what it was. And this guy was standing up there, and I kept going to that had to go to that Baptist church every morning. We pounded the preacher. We did every living thing there was to do. And I finally got to be 13, which will happen to you if you do what I was doing one day at a time. And I, one day after school, I got in the car with this girl, and we went out in the country. Well, I was raised in a big town, so didn't take that to go over about two blocks. And we got to messing around. And I got those funny feelings. They said, and I told them about it. We've been meaning to talk to you. See, I knew they had. You know we've been praying for you. See, it's not like AA. AA said, saw old Jim lay in the ditch last night. If he lives, we'll get him. And this bunch, they hone in on you. They see you get that gleam in your eye, and they say, oh, my God, he's getting ready to think it. And as soon as he thinks it, if he does it, we'll lose him. So they said, what you need to do is get saved. I said, what from? Haven't done nothing. They said, meet me down at the funeral, or church, the service. So I met them down there, and we got in the room, and they just prayed. And then they said, now when they sing that last stanza, you come down there and you get saved. So they pointed at me, sang that last stanza, my throat hurts, and I come down. It's kind of like AA, except didn't give out any chips. They hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are, and you know you're not, but hell, I liked it. And they throw you in the tank, and the handkerchief leaks, and you choke a little, but you come out all right. Went to school the next day, saw that girl, came right back. I said, well, we're going to have to do it again. It didn't take. They said, no, you just don't do it. Well, they didn't know. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know that they could just say, don't do that, Joe. And they don't do it anymore. I said, how do you don't do it? Don't think about it. I said, I wonder why I didn't think about that. I thought, well, it's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll just go ahead and think about it the rest of the day. When I get up tomorrow, I'll never think about it again. Got up the next day and thought about it more than I ever thought about it before in my life. I had no idea that I'm the kind of guy, when I start not to do something, I'm going to do it all the time. And when I start not to think about it, that's all I'm going to think about. I used to try to wake up real quick before I thought about it. Finally got out of high school. Had to go to summer school to get out of high school. I don't think I was so dumb. I was just busy. Like the guy came by and he said, I spoke to you yesterday. You sit in the car and you didn't even speak to me. I said, I was having a meeting. He said, there wasn't anybody in there but you. I thought, well, my God, how many do you need? 30 miles away was a town that was wild and wicked. Had beer, had honky-tonks, and I'd heard about it. So I told this buddy one Saturday, that's before I knew you could do it during the week. Let's go over and find out what that deal is. Drove over there, opened the door of that honky-tonk, and my God, there was that deacon I'd seen all my life. With the warm girl in one hand and the cold beer in the other. I said, my God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us. And we didn't even get to do it. You get caught before you do it, you ought to forget it. He said, hell, he can't tell anybody. I said, he's got a better shot with Jesus than you and I did. However, I liked the girl he's with on Saturday night a lot better than the one he's with on Sunday morning. And he was happier than I had ever seen him. I'd see him every Sunday morning, and I thought deacons were just sad. Now I know, hell, he's just tired. We drank 2 beers, didn't taste good, didn't feel good, and I was glad to get out of there. Wanted to go to church the next morning, first time in my life. I thought, maybe you get old enough, you don't have to go. There he was. Sad like he always was. And I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit and just don't tell anybody. God, I couldn't wait to tell my buddy. I said, next week we're going to go back there next Saturday. Had this big town, had 2 joints with the other joint. Did not see a deacon I knew. Would have committed adultery, but I didn't know much about it. And you know how we are. Think about it all day long, drink a beer and forget it. Or if we do, we didn't know whether we did or not. Learned how to drink, didn't even know I knew how to drink. Used to drink one beer right after the other. Get feeling good, get peeled off. Learned how to dance. Southern Baptist got allowed to dance. Fell down the dance floor, broke my nose. Did it 5 times after I learned how to do it. Blacked out, waked up the next morning, threw up just like I've been doing it for years. This guy called, said, "How do you feel?" I said, "God, I feel horrible." He said, "Oh, but you had a great time." I said, "Oh, well." Then I knew how to have a good time. Just go out and get drunk, black out, wake up the next morning, throw up, then you know you had a good time. Didn't know you drank it any other way. I thought people who didn't drink like I drank didn't drink. Now they're putting umbrellas in them. I guess throwing in rainwater to get in there. They were already putting fruit in drinks when I quit drinking. Not mine, because, you know, too much acid's not good for you. One afternoon, I was over at this town by myself about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I wanted to put off drinking as long as I could, so I was just walking. And I walked by this post office, and there's a sign out there that said, "We need you." I walked in there, and they did. They said, "Have you ever been to California?" And I said, "No, I haven't been, but 30 miles away from home. We're going tomorrow." I said, "What do I do?" It's just a sign right here. I'm already having trouble. My folks are already saying things like, "Jimmy would never want to do that." Yeah, I did do. Already done it once, get ready to do it again. And they'd say, "Jimmy wouldn't be caught dead doing that." My God, wouldn't it be awful to be caught dead doing that? Everything they knew I wanted to do, I didn't want to do. Everything they knew I'd be caught dead doing, I wanted to do. And the other thing was, I would go with kids places. God, I'd want to go with them, and I didn't want to go. But I'd go so they'd like me, and they never liked me enough. And I always got the wrong girl, for God's sakes. Somebody else got the right one. So I went home and told them, I said, "I'm going to California." They said, "How are you going to California?" "You can't go. You haven't got any money." And I said, "I'm going to the Air Force. They're leaving tomorrow." They look at me funny, but they let me go. I go back over there and went to San Antonio. That outfit really operates one day at a time. And they're a funny bunch. They get up in the middle of the night, make the bed real quick like somebody's coming. Never did. Then they want to go down and eat. My God, it's dark. It'd make you throw up. You'd get sick eating that time of day even if you hadn't been drunk. What do you think? The speaker's off, you're lucky. And they were scared because they always walked in groups. Whoever it was that was running our deal thought it would be a clever thing for us to take a surprise trip. And if they wouldn't tell us where we're going, so we couldn't tell anybody, then nobody would know. Which I thought was a hell of a good idea. Whoever it was that was running ours decided we ought to go to China. I'm in the Air Force, so we go to China by boat. I think they flew the Navy over and the Marines ran the boat. There's a lot of Chinese over there. They have a few hills and trees and a little rice, but they mainly just make Chinese. They like it, and they're good at it, and they're just not interested in doing anything else. They just want to make Chinese. They lose some, but they're making so damn many that it doesn't make any difference. Well, after you're over there about 3 weeks, you see all the Chinese you'll ever need to see. So I told them I was ready to come back home. We stayed 2 years. Then we came back by a boat. My folks said, "Where are you going to school?" I said, "Hell, I'm not going to school. Hate school. Wouldn't be caught dead going to school. Like never got out of school and went to school." They said, "If you don't have that piece of paper, you won't even be able to apply for a job, let alone get one. Every person coming out of the service is going to have that piece of paper." Well, I proved my folks wrong. I gutted that thing straight through 3.5 years, got that piece of paper, made sure that I didn't learn one single thing. I made sure that every course I took, I was going to pass it, and that it wouldn't benefit a human being whatsoever. You know what I like about you and I? We'll go to any length, even if it destroys us, just to be right. A lot of people won't do that. A lot of people will say, I could be wrong about that. Not you and I. The only time you and I will use that statement is when we're damn sure we're right. Then we might say, well, I could be wrong about that. Having some minor difficulties with women. If you put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. I don't know where I learned how to do that. I see some guys, they just go one girl one night, one girl next day, and one girl next week. You can't do that. You got to make sure you got a pretty girl and one that you can take home and be in love with and show your folks, for God's sakes. You can't just go with any girl. The only thing wrong with being that way is when you're walking around in love with no girl. Take me about 2 months to find that precious sick little thing. Then we'd be so much in love in about 2 months, I'd almost have to quit work. Then it would just deteriorate from there on out. When I got to A, I thought, this is the greatest place I have ever been. First time I'd ever been where they had the sick women grouped. And I like both kinds. I like the ones that got sick doing it, and the ones that got sick watching him do it. Every place I worked, they always wanted me to come to work on Mondays. That's my flu day. I don't have the flu on Thursday. Monday's my flu day. And evidently, every place where I worked, you have to see that they do it right. God's assigned us to make sure they operate properly. And treat you right. And treat others right. That's hard work. Some of those places that fired me are still operating, doing it wrong. Which probably means we, most of us are too smart to be in business. Finally got out of a job and I couldn't get one. The way I'd look for a job is I'd get up every morning, I'd throw up and I'd spray. And then I'd go fill out that form. They ask you personal questions like, where have you worked the last 10 years? Well, it's none of their business. They even want to know where you lived. I like to move around some. People where I live like for me to move around some. How are you going to remember all those addresses? Hell, you can't do it. Then all the rest of the blanks, you wonder what they'd like for me to say. Hell, you don't know them very well. It's hard to figure that stuff out. Interview take about 5 minutes, then you go out and get drunk. Just do that one day at a time. I finally saved this one place where I knew they had an opening, I knew I'd qualify for the job, and I had a buddy who worked there I knew would help me get the job. And I went in there, and the moment I walked in there and saw this guy, my buddy's over there, I thought, oh, I got it. He said, oh, my God, you don't want this job. Yeah, I want the job. Hell, I need a job. I'm out of a job. Got to have the job. You don't want this job. Everybody knew what I didn't want. Everybody knew what I wanted. It's always the opposite. Also knew there's something he'd like to tell me, but he didn't know how to do it. Knew they was going to like it better when I left. So I just got up and left, went out and got drunk, waked up the next morning, threw up and sprayed. I said, you know, I've been doing this for over 10 days. I think I'll just take the day off. Went out to the golf course and ate no leg, no piece of toast. Went around the beer joint where my last spiritual advisor worked. He said, my God, man, drink this beer. I said, oh, well, we're Baptists. We never drink for noon. That's 10:30. He said, drink the beer. Don't want anybody having DTs out here. So I drank half the beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. You know, you start thinking about women or something, gets your nose and burns. Then you got to drink the rest of the day just to kill the pain. I knew how to meditate before I got here. I don't do it that deeply anymore. Just when it's me, God, and the commode, and you say, oh, God, and it's stringy, this is an after dinner talk. And you don't know where the end is. You can't breathe. Hell, you'll get it back. So you don't know whether you're going or coming. When you meditate that deeply, it's tiring. And I used to just lean over there, and that bowl was always just as cool. I told that guy, I said, I think I better go home and lie down. I think I'm coming down with something. God, I'd love to live with me. I'm supposed to call on hospitals. I'd get up for morning, and I'd get in that car, and I said, God, I hate to go out there to that big old hospital. You know, we can't find a parking place. Then when you do, you got to take that kit, go through the lobby, down through the basement, winding around there. You know that purchasing agent. Hell, he's not going to buy anything anyway. See, you don't even have to park. Just drive right on by. Wait till 10:30, go to the beer joint, said, didn't buy anything again today. So I went home, and I got the living room. I was living in Houston then. And I got the living room, and I decided what I need to do is commit suicide. Then those guys will see in the Houston Chronicle, Jimmy Williams commits suicide. And they'll never get over it. For the rest of their lives, they'll regret not hiring me. But I didn't know how to do it. I see it on television now all the time. Suicide, call that number. They probably got pamphlets. Softer, easier ways. Join our group. We're losing some, but we're gaining all the time. I didn't like guns because I don't like noise of the morning. And besides that, they splatter all over everything. Razor blades were popular then, but I didn't know how to do it. All they ever said in the paper was, cut his wrist with a razor blade. What kind of razor? Straight edge, double edge? Which wrist? You got two. Which way do you cut it? Nobody to call. I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. Hell, you get blood all over the carpet. Now I'm always thinking of others. So I went to the bathroom where I did a lot of things anyway. And I had sense enough to know, what if you cut the left wrist? Left side would die, right side would be alive. What if you backed out half dead and half alive? So I thought, if I cut both wrists, then I could bleed and die evenly. See, we're not dumb, even though we haven't done it before. So I cut both wrists, and I'm just sitting there, listening to the drip, thinking about those guys are going to worry about it for the rest of their days. And the phone rang. And I thought, what if where I'm going, I'll always wonder who that was called? That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I put a Band-Aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. It was the police. You know, the police have been trained by ministers. But I've never talked to one of them yet didn't have a personality change. They'll stop you about 3 o'clock in the morning and say, come go along with me. Then I'll say, man, I can't go. I'm telling you, I'm supposed to be home at 7 o'clock. It's 3 now. I have got to get home. Then they say, get out of the car! By God, I'm not going to do it. Then they really go nuts, and you have to pacify them, go along with them. Guy said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here. And he said, no, you wasn't. I said, how do you all know? And he said, we was there. Then I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I'd already learned, don't ever talk to anybody, don't worry about where you've been than you do. I said, well, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, we'll either come out there or get you, or you can come on down here. And I said, just wait for me, and I'll come down there. He said, if I were you, I'd pick up an attorney on the way, because you're in trouble, brother. And I said, well, that'll take me an extra 30 minutes, but wait for me, I'm coming. God, I love to live with me. I can live a week in a half a day. I've had a hell of a day. Been off the golf course, thrown up all over the damn golf course, come back. Had a big meeting, committed suicide. Now I've got to call an emergency meeting, and hell, it's only 11 o'clock. I checked up, had $36 before inflation was plenty to start a new career. And I said, you know, I'll bet you the Lord is trying to tell me that I need to leave Houston. So I just put all my old stuff in there. It had a few sheets and quilts and just leveled that car and room, and it's just for me. Mailed the key to the folks that owned the place, and had one piece of furniture, an old lamp, lampshade, and I put that on top of everything. I guess I was going to carry the light if I could find the plug. stopped by and got a pint of bourbon and took off out of Houston and waked up the next morning in Brownwood with $7. And I said, wonder how my folks are getting along. It's amazing when the Lord tells you it's time to call home. And I call collect so they'd know it was me. They said, what are you doing in Brownwood? I gave them my famous phrase, oh, just out riding around. They said, well, why don't you come by Fort Worth and have a cup of coffee? And I said, oh, I believe we'll. Never shortchange my folks. Always, they're not going to get their money back. So always gave them my very finest story. In fact, I got to listen to it, and it was so horrible, hell, I cried with them. I thought, my God, if I'd known it was that bad, I'd left Houston 3 years earlier. Old John said, well, Jimmy's honest. Let him have 100. With 107, man. Pay daytime. But I knew I had to sweat that night out, and I knew I couldn't drink. So I went in that bedroom and closed that door, and I walked and walked and sat and walked, never slept a minute until finally daylight came. And I started out there, and my aunt's already up, and she says, I said, Annalee, there's one little thing I left out last night. When I was having all that trouble down there in Houston, I was drinking some. But I just want you to know that I shall never drink again as long as I live. And you'll never have to worry about my being underfinanced ever again. And my folks just look at me like a blank wall. I said, do you remember when I sobered up and went back to ask her? I said, do you remember that time? She said, which one? Then she said, I think I remember. When you left, I turned around to John and said, what do you think? He says, he's 33. He'll never live till he's 35. Said, we thought you'd live. That's probably the last time we're going to see you alive. Well, I've got $107, and where am I going? I just happened to remember I helped a guy get a job in the Rio Grande Valley, and I heard they had palm trees and everything down there. I thought, God, I'll just go down there and see him. Probably wants to see me anyway. Stopped right out of Fort Worth, stopped at the filling station, said, how far is to Waco? 79 miles. They happened to sell beer, and I said, give me three. End up at the Rio Grande Valley. You know where that is? That's the end. The United States ends there. They've got a little creek. They change countries. If you haven't found your bottom yet, good place to find it. It's right down there. And I thought this guy would let me come to his house. But he had made arrangements after I called and then had to call him back. There's an old hotel run by a drunk, so he made arrangements for me to stay there for nothing. Never took my clothes out of the car because I'm leaving every day. Every morning I'd get up, go down a rickety elevator, go across the street, get my short sock shirt, go back up there and take a shower. Did that every morning for 3 weeks. Well, finally they hired me. Now, they didn't hire me because they wanted me. I was breathing fairly well, and that's all. Now, if you're going to Valley, people don't go down there looking for jobs. They go down there snow dodging out of the Midwest, or they go down there to play. Nobody goes down there looking for jobs, so if you're breathing fairly good, they'll hire you. And when I'd get a new job, I could always just get drunk and not drunk. And I'd work 7 days a week till I'd get up into my place. Sometimes to have somebody in my place, it took me 3 months to get the guy in my place fired. It's hard getting people to understand things. And I finally got him fired, and I got up to my place where then I could settle down. And I realized what one of my biggest troubles has always been. I've always been true to one woman at a time. And I said, you know, if I would have a number one and a spare, then I'd never have to go through that blank spot ever again. And that's hard to do when you're drinking. You'll call somebody about 10 o'clock in the morning, say, if you're not doing anything tonight, I'll pick you up about 7:30. Might be 3 or 4 days before you get by there. It's hard to court drinking. And my weekends were like this. I'd get through work. I worked Monday through Saturday noon. Then I'd jump in the car, go to the golf course, have a heavy lunch like a six-pack and a cheese cracker. Get drunk, blackout, be home in bed by 6:30, 6:45, go to sleep, blacked out, wake up about 10:30, 10:45, then go down to my beer joint And that's when they closed at 1 a.m. Then whoever my best friends were at the time, we'd drive on over to Matamoras and spend the rest of the evening. When daylight came, sometimes we'd eat a little Wayward Rancheros and throw them up. Or sometimes we skipped it. Drink beer Sunday and taper off into Monday. And sometimes I made it and sometimes I missed it. I was over at number one's house one night. And sometimes, you know, we're just too honest for folks. I was over there, and I was blacking out. Didn't have to work on that Saturday. I'd traded off with the guy. So I was over there Friday night around 11 o'clock, blacking out. And evidently, I'd never mentioned number two. So I just merely mentioned that I thought I'd drop by and see number two on the way home. And evidently, she wanted to discuss it. I said, I want to go to the bathroom first, and she followed me in there. And I don't remember the meeting. I'm living in an old faded green trailer in an alley behind a motel. I had the rock yards a long time before they started putting them in. I'd see those weeds come up there and I'd say, you'll never make it. And I've already learned how to wake up in total fright in my own bed, let alone somebody else's. So I'm laying there asleep and something goes wham! God, I jumped up, looked down, had my clothes on. I said, I bet I was going somewhere early this morning. Looked down that old white shirt, had blood on it. Oh, my God, blood makes me sick, you know. Then I felt in my head, had four knots on it. Knots. It was all knots. A little blood is still left. I wrecked my car. It's the police. I've wrecked my car. And trailer, one door. You can't get out the windows. They're about like that. No way to get out of the damn place. And I'm in total fright. The guy's beating on that door. And I finally opened the door, and it was that 6'4", 240-pound Baptist preacher saying, come go along with me. And I said, preacher, I know I look like I'm ready, but I'm not ready. I don't know where the meeting is, but I can't make it. I know I look like it, but I'm not ready. I can't make it. Wherever the meeting is, preacher, count me out. I cannot make it. He said, get in the car. God. I looked out there. My car wasn't wrecked. I better wreck somebody else's car. So we get to his car, and I said, Preacher, I've got to have a beer. I've got to have a beer, preacher. I have got to have a beer. He said, there'll be no drinking before the meeting. And he just kept driving. I said, Preacher, I'm not breathing. Preacher, I am not breathing. I have got to have a beer. I'm not breathing, preacher. You know, Baptist preachers don't give a damn whether you're breathing or not. We drove up in front of her house, so I'm assuming the meeting's going to be there. Head is killing me. My head, knots. They're knots. Knots. Walked in there. She did look like she might have fallen in a bush or something. And I waited a few minutes. I said, I have got to go to the bathroom. I went in there and looked in that mirror, and I'm going to tell you something. She won. I'll never know really what happened. What I think happened, I probably lost my equilibrium in that bathroom, fell in that bathtub, and she stopped me. 2 weeks later, we got married. We got married in the First Baptist Church, so it worked. We got married at 10 o'clock in the morning, so there'd be no drinking before the funeral or ceremony. I told her since she had been married before, and I was pure, that it wouldn't be necessary for us to invite a lot of people, but she could invite a few of her close friends. So I'm blacking out again on 11 o'clock on Friday night. So I start calling my friends. They said I quit around 3. I get to the church. She's already there. And I start across the yard in my beer distributor golfing buddy come out of that church and said, wait a minute, I gotta talk to you. You called me at 3:15 this morning. I want to tell you something. You listen to me. The longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks. Nobody here is to see you get married. We're all here because nobody believes it. Well, I showed him. I hung it in there for 8 years, but my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up and throw up in peace. I knew I needed to quit smoking because it made me gag of morning. So I'd grab those cigarettes and grab that coffee and go in that bathroom, lock that door, and she'd tell me what I was through that door. And I'd have to get upset, go make the living, get drunk and come home and tell her what she was. And we did that one day at a time. I finally went back to that preacher and I said, "Preacher, this thing is not working." He said, "You know what's wrong with you? You're missing the beauty of life." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Did you know the fruit trees are in bloom?" I said, "No." "What you need to do is go home and get your wife and drive up the valley and smell the aroma and look at the blossoms." I said, "Yeah." Jumped in the car, went home, opened the door, and said, "Get in the car!" She said, "What for?" I said, "We're going to go look at the blossoms." She said, "The blossoms?" I said, "Yeah, we're missing the whole damn thing." So she gets in the car, and I go by and pick up a six-pack, start up the valley. See a sign that says 14 miles to Matamoros, turn left, go to Matamoros, switch to tequila, blacked out, missed the whole damn thing. Lost that job, could not find a job, went completely insane crazy for about 2 months. Finally, if there's one other guy that drank and was a drunk just like me, it was this guy. When he and I would get together, we drank and were drunks just identical to each other. And he managed a drug company. And he said, "I understand you're looking for a job." I said, "Yeah." He said, "How'd you like to go to work for me?" And I said, "Well, we'd have to think about it. I haven't decided. I may change careers. I don't have any." He said, "Well, let's just go to work for me." I went to work for him. Took him about 6 weeks to send me to West Texas. Fort Stockton, Texas. 536 people lived there. 36 of them were making a living. I joined the 500. Great place. Had trees out there about this high. You can see California on a clear day. I'm supposed to stand in a drugstore and hold a pad with lines on it, and this pharmacist calls out stuff like oreomycin, and you're supposed to put it in those lines. Well, I couldn't do it. You can't do it moving. You just couldn't do it. And that pharmacist says, "My God, you look like you're going to fly apart." I said, "Any minute." He said, "Well, take some of these." Now, this was before Valium. Understand, Valium is both eyes crossed and you walk straight. This was just Librium, which was nothing. That little old two-tone green and black. Hell, there wasn't nothing to them. It took two of them. Waited 15 or 20 seconds, nothing happened. I'm used to something moving or burning or doing something, didn't do nothing. So I took three more. Then my knee just go, "Huh?" I thought, "God, I know how to weave, now I've got to learn new stance." Y'all have ruined the drug business. I used to get them for nothing. And what used to get me is that he'd say, "Jim, I'm a little short of 10 milligrams. 25 be okay?" "Be fine." See, we don't go by milligram. We just go by size. So I take Librium daytime, and at night, I drink beer. If I'm going to close the place, I stay on beer. After the third beer and there before, if I'm going home early, I'll go get a pint of bourbon, put it on top of those three beers and that Librium, and go home like you're supposed to go home, blacked out. My ideal evening is when I blacked out right at the door. Sometimes I do it a little early. Sometimes I have to have one more drink, but I was a blackout drinker. Never had a wreck, blacked out. Bad drunk driver. I have different speeds at different stages of drunkenness. Sometimes I hit stuff that wasn't even moving. Somebody recommended me for a job back in Houston, and had no business getting the job. Didn't even know what in the hell they did. They didn't know who I was. Some guy that recommended me, hadn't seen me in 15 years, and I got the job. And oh, what's her name, and I had finally developed such a nice, sweet, deep hate for one another that we were really safe because the one that died first won. But it was best we have a two-holer where we could sleep in separate bedrooms just to be safe for each other. So we set up battle, and my new customers never saw me drunk. I'd always leave them. If I played golf or something, maybe have one beer or something, then I'd go home and go to my beer joint, get drunk, go home, just like you're supposed to, blacked out. The day before Christmas Eve of 1965, I played golf with these administrators and their in-laws and outlaws, and I got a little too hospitable, and we went over to their house to meet all the women, and I blacked out right at the house. And that's nothing new for me. And I drove from one side of Houston to the other, blacked out. Nothing new. Waked up the next morning, and any time that I would ever be at someone's house, I'd always call back and say, I sure am sorry about last night. I'm not sorry about last night, damn it. I want them to tell me what I did. They never tell you. They would just say, it was okay, Jim, you just got drunk. Drunk was getting to be a bad word with me. My best friends were telling me, Jim, I love you, but you just can't come to the house anymore because you're drunk. The only drunk that I knew was the town drunk back in Croll, Texas, and they called him Old Bratch, who was the drunk that slept downtown and drank that wine. And drunk was a bad name for me. That morning, the same thing happened. Old What's-Her-Name went next door. They was getting ready to have a Christmas Eve party. So I guess I heard it on radio. I picked up the phone, looked under Alcoholics Anonymous, and called in a group. And the gal acted like she's glad I called her. She had known then I had the wrong number. She said, somebody be right out. Well, hell, I waited an hour and nobody came, looked in the icebox, 10:15, had three beers. And I said, well, I'll just call them and tell them I don't need them. Forgot who in the hell it was I called. And about that time, the phone rang and the guy said, be right there, I'm running late, and hung up before I could even tell him I didn't need him. He came by himself because his wife at the time was managing these apartments. And he used to watch me going back and forth to 7-Eleven saying, if he lives, we'll get him. Looked out that window, and there's that guy with a book under his arm. And I said, little old short guy with a pointed nose. And I said, my God, we're going to read that book and pray. I've not only been baptized, I've been rededicated 10 times. I thought, hell, I'll just get rid of him. He came in, we didn't read the book, we didn't pray, and about that time, oh, What's-Her-Name came back in. He said, you want to go with me? Well, I didn't, but it's better than staying with her. So I got in the car with him, and I said, God, he's not my kind of guy. I'm going off with a perfect damn stranger. Should have taken my car, even though his was better. And I said, I'll buy a beer. I don't want a beer. God, I knew it. I waited about 10 seconds. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I have got to have a beer, and I've got to have one right now. Either let me off on top of this freeway, and I'll walk over there at that youth totem, or take me over there. I've got to have a beer. I've got to have it right now. And besides that, it's 11:20. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. I can handle total fright if I got a little light. It's when there's no light you can't handle the fright. And we drove over kind of a bad neighborhood and drove up in front of this old house. And I said, hell, is this it? Yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. Walked in the door and had a bunch of deacons sitting over there talking about women in the stock market. And I found out later on they didn't know anything about either one. Back there in the back, they had an old piece of linoleum. I know it was old with holes in it when they put it on top of that bar. And the bartender, he didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. The program of attraction, you know. And he told that bartender, said, fix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God, what do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, well, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And besides all that, you're used to sugar in your system from alcohol. And the honey has already been digested. I said, indigestion's not my problem. God, if you throw up right, you don't have indigestion. I drank half of it and curdled. It came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. We have plenty. I thought, hell, I'm going to put on a show for these guys, for God's sakes. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. They just sat there watching. I need another animal in here today, walking back and forth, laughing and talking, looking at you like a tennis match. And you're sitting there drinking that sweet, sweet. Hell, I hadn't had a piece of chocolate pie in 10 years, for God's sakes. Finally, about 4:30, he said, "Well, let's go." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Let me out a couple of blocks before we get to the apartment." I knew I had to get my car, slip in there and get it, and go get some bourbon, because beer would not cut that sweet taste. He said, "Don't drink anything. I'm going to pick you up in an hour and a half." I said, "What for?" "We're going to a meeting." I said, "Where?" "Right back where we came from." Said, "My God, we was there all day." I said, "Well, I'll be ready." So I got out and walked and walked, and here we come, and back over there we go. Kind of a funny bunch. I saw a few of them kind of hugging and kissing and laughing. The rest of them, they didn't act like they was too happy to be there either. Got up and said a little old prayer, for God's sakes. And then some girl got up and talked 2 or 3 hours. I know they said 30 minutes, but I know it's 2 or 3 hours. And they'd just laugh. Wasn't a damn thing funny. Up, talk 2 or 3 hours. They'd laugh. I said, "I'm going to tell you something. This is a sick bunch of people." Then they all got up and held hands and said the Lord's Prayer, for God's sakes. And then all of a sudden the Holy Spirit moved in there. Every one of them started talking. Nobody listened. I said, "I wonder how in the hell he did that." They didn't sing any songs, lay any hands, didn't do nothing. I said, "I'm going to keep my eyes open tomorrow night and see what he did." Me and the deacon are standing back there at the door. Then I see the deal. Men and women getting together, holding hands, jumping in those cars. I said, "Uh-oh." After you're here a little while, you get to go over to these apartments and have a little drink and talk about this damn thing. We went night after night after night after night. We're not getting invited anywhere. I've got the only deacon that doesn't, nobody likes it. One night, it doesn't rain in Houston, kind of like here. It just falls out. And it's raining, pouring rain. He called and said, "I'll pick you up in 30 minutes. I said, "It's raining." "Did you ever go get a drink when it's raining?" "I'll be ready." One weekend, old what's-her-name had gone back to Valley to see if we had any friends left. So I just went home, locked the door, pulled out all the shades, turned out all the lights, nothing on but the TV set. That old phone just ring, 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 let it ring. Next morning he called and said, "Where were you last night?" I said, "I was right here watching television, enjoyed every damn minute of it, and I may do it again today." He said, "Well, you missed it." I said, "What did I miss?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Wasn't you there?" He said, "Yeah, but I only heard what I was supposed to hear. We'll never know what it was you were supposed to hear." I thought, "My God, you've got to go every night. You'll miss it." We went every night, 3 months, I got drunk. Every night, 3 months, I got drunk. Every night, 3 months, I got drunk, and I sobered up all by myself. And then I had a meeting, and I decided I'm probably just a heavy drinker. I'm probably the one they talk about that's not really alcoholic. And you can't make an alcoholic out of somebody who's not an alcoholic. Probably the only thing that's ever been wrong with me is I've just been underfinanced. And if I can get properly financed, I can check her and everybody else and tell them to shove it, and I'm gone. But first things first, what I need to do is go back and officially resign and say, "Thank you very much, but I'm just not one of y'all, but I appreciate everything, and I've got some things I got to go do." Well, the meeting had already started. Evidently, while drinking one of the evenings, I had called in about 2 in the morning. I doubt it very seriously. I think they'll tell you any damn thing they want to, whether it's true or not, whatever fits the picture. So I'm getting ready to resign, and he's on the other side of the room, and then here he comes, and I'm walking to him so I can officially resign and say bye. Before I could tell him, no patience, you understand, he said, "Don't you ever call me again." I said, "God, I'm glad you said that. I never called you in the first place. And I'm going to tell something that your best friends will not tell you. Nobody likes you here. We don't get invited anywhere, and they don't know me, so it's got to be you."
And I'm going to tell you another thing. If I had as bad a personality as you do, I'd go back to drinking. And I'm going to tell you another thing. You look at me, because this is the last time you're going to see this face, and it's the last time you're going to hear this voice. I never called you in the first place, and you won't ever have to worry about me. If you're the last SOB on this earth, you'll never hear from me ever again. And I left, and he didn't, till the next morning. And then I called him, and he said, meet me at the club. And I walked in, and he said, get your coffee and sit down. They talk to you like a dog here, you know. He said, I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Al-Teen, Al-Top, and Al-Dog. Absolutely no failure here. Never has, never will, impossible to, and cannot fail. There's just no failure here. No way to fail. Never has, never will fail. No failure is ever going to be here, provided you do exactly what we tell you to do the way we tell you to do it. So now there's going to be one thing that you're going to get to do for the rest of your days, but you're the only one that's going to get to do it. And it's the only thing that you're going to get to do. If you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, they'll flounder on the same subject for years. So we're going to give you a decision to make this morning. You're going to get to make a decision every day, whether you're going to go our way of life or your way of life. So we're going to give you that decision this morning. Either you're going to go our way of life or right back out that door. I said, I don't want to do either one. He said, I didn't ask you what you wanted to do. I asked you what you were going to do. I said, no, you mean to tell me you don't care and the group doesn't care whether I want to or not? He said, not a bit. I said, well, if you'll make it perfectly clear to the group that I don't want to do it, then I'll do it. He said, well, first of all, there's some things that we got to get straight. It's your thinking that's wrong. I said, how much am I thinking wrong? We always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know. I said, you put a sign up there on the wall that says, think, think, think. And he said, that's for us. He said, now we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. The things we're going to give you not to do is going to change. The things we're going to give you to do, you'll just add to. Then it's going to happen over there. I said, what's going to happen over there? We don't know, but it always happens. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I've been listening to you and listening to you and listening to you. You never listen to me. I want you to hear me. I do not understand. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget it. Said, there's two things that you must remember for the rest of your days. No matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll have understanding. And when you quit trying to understand, then you can enjoy it. And the other thing is, no matter what your situation is, it's never the situation. It's never them. It's never her. It's never God. It's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell you tell me for then? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. I said, now I'm going to give you the kicker. This is the very one thing that got you here. But it's also the very one thing that, should it not change, will be the very one thing that's going to keep you from getting all the things that God has for His children. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and begin to know that you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. He said, I know. Then now the first thing we're going to do is learn how to not do something. Said, the first thing we're going to learn how to not do is not drink or take a pill. Said, now, you know that card that I gave you that has my number? Four other men, no women on mine. When you get squirrely, definitely before you take a drink or a pill, no matter what time, day or night it is, call one of those numbers. If you don't make the phone call, you didn't do it. You've got to make the phone call. And that's where we're going to learn how to not do something. And this is what we're going to do every day. When you get up in the morning, get down on your knees and say these words and these words only. God, take me today and do with me as you see fit. Let thy will only be done in my life, and help me to definitely not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. Do not need to tell God what he has not done, nor what he needs to do. God can handle that all by himself. Then call me before you go to the bathroom. Why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean to tell me that you don't think I've got enough sense to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. Before I got down on my knees, I said, God, you and I know he don't know. Hell, he's a Presbyterian. But we're going to do everything this time just exactly like he says, so when we get enough this time, we're gone. Got down on my knees, said that little prayer, made sure I need to go to the bathroom, picked up the phone call. He didn't ask where I need to go, and I said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. I met him at the club, and he said, now go to work. I said, I hate my job. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, well, I hated it so much yesterday I couldn't go to work. He said, what'd you do, sit in that chair and think? I said, well, till noon I went to AA club. He said, you don't know how to go to work? I said, how? He said, go get in the car. If you'll write that down, we'll catch it. Then the other thing is, he said, besides that little, later on we'll do it more. But in the beginning, besides that prayer of the morning, when you get in the car, invite God in today. I said, how do you do that? He said, you say, God, I invite you in today. Put that on the card, and then we got it. Pretty heavy, but we get it. Then you got to go to work, which I think's wrong for alcoholics. We should go to work at 65. Then you got to come back to the club, and you walk in there, and there they are with all the wheels around, and they say out loud, because they know the idiot's here, get your coffee and sit with us. Hell, I know to get my coffee and sit down. Then when you're almost comfortable, you have no idea what in the hell they're talking about. Out loud so everybody can hear, it's time for you to go home and have dinner and come back to the meeting. Hell, I know to go home and have dinner and come back to the meeting. By God, they've got to tell you and tell you out loud. Then he said, now, after the meeting, he said, now go home and thank God for the day. I said, I do not thank God. It's been a miserable damn day. Hate you, hate God, hate AA, and hate her. And I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He said, do you feel like when you pray to God that you don't mean it? I said, that's right, and I'm not going to do it. He said, God is not depending on you for your relationship with him. And the action that you're taking is the thing that's going to cause all the things to happen. And the action that you're taking, you never know you're taking it. And all the things going to happen from the action that you don't know you're taking, all these things that are going to happen, you had no idea was going to happen. So all the things that you think have to happen will never need to happen. Well, hell, I understood that for God's sake. I said, do you mean to tell me that God does not care when I pray to him whether I mean it or not? He said, not a bit. Group doesn't care? Not a bit. I just got in my car, went home, got down on my knees, closed the door so what's-her-name couldn't get in there, got down on my knees. Okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Hell, if he don't care and they don't care, hell, I don't care. Did that for about 2 months. One morning about 9:30, didn't do anything any different this day than any other day. About 9:30, I'm driving down old 610 Loop, right above Memorial Drive, and this God that I had never known as my friend moved into that car with me. And the first time I knew something different than I'd ever known it before. I knew I would never need to take another drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug unless I myself insisted upon it. And I knew. God stayed with me all that day. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I said, man, I'm going to get me a tent and some tambourines. I'm going to go save some souls. Oh, Oral, better look out, because Jimmy's coming. I thought, hell, I might even let him go and put up the tent. I knew they were going to make me the leader. God, I couldn't wait to get back to the club. He's late, and he walked through that door, and I said, get your coffee and sit down. They don't like it coming back at them. But he did it. I took him over to that other room, and I set him down there where I could be right up there, where I could see him. I stood right there. Put him right there. Told him the deal. And I waited for him to make me the leader. He grinned just a little and said, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's her name? He said, my wife and I decided to leave our marriage just like it is. We're not even going to mess with it. I'm going to send you to a guy that's got his all worked out. So he sent me to an Episcopalian. You know they don't know. And this guy, I told him what the deal was. And he said, I said, listen, I've been praying for something. He said, are you married? And I said, well, not really. Legally I am, but we're not really married. We don't sleep together. I've been praying for somebody to sleep with, and nobody will. And I said, I know that the Lord has already sent me the girl. It's just for me. Been sober almost a month. But they won't let me go with her. And he said, you're not going with anybody. I said, no, they won't let me. He said, well, we'll practice on her. He said, but you know, when you got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you felt like you were the only one, and you were lonesome even though you weren't alone. And you didn't fit in AA, and you didn't fit back out there. I said, yeah. He said, if you're willing to go through those lonesome periods, I'll guarantee you a relationship with men and women you never could have imagined. And I'll give you a bonus on top of that. I'll guarantee you a relationship with Almighty God that you could never have dreamed of. I said, I don't believe that. He said, isn't that wonderful? I said, what do you mean? He said, you don't need to. It's the action. I said, oh, I've already heard that. He said, you're still living there. I said, yeah, but separately. We're living there. He said, we're going to practice on her. First thing you're going to do is never tell her what's wrong with her ever again. I said, who's going to tell her? He said, I don't know, but you're not. And you're never going to do anything to get friends or Al-Anon or kids to work her around to get her to do what you want her to do. I said, never? He said, never. And you're going to pray for her? And I said, I'm not. You pray for her. He said, yes, and I want you to learn this prayer because you're going to use it for the rest of your life. God, thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship, let it be what you want it to be, and show me the truth. I said, I do not want God's will to be done for her as well as for me. He said, remember, what you want has nothing to do with it. So I started saying that prayer. He said, you may have said 100 times a day, every time you think of it, say that prayer. So I started saying that prayer and prayer and prayer. And finally I said, you need to take her to Al-Anon. Al-Anons, I want you to know, I love you very, very much. I'm glad you're here. Anytime I can do anything for you, day or night, call me. The way when they took her to you, they found you depressing. The more they took her to you, the more she found you depressing. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. I think that I'm saying this prayer so me and old what's-her-name are going to get together. And what happened was that old love, lust, sex thing surfaced in me, and I had it and couldn't get rid of it. And I told my sponsor over and over and over and over again. I'd call him and tell him. I'd tell him every time I see him. Finally, I told the group. And one of the girls said, you're not supposed to tell that in the group. So I went over and told another group. And one of them snitched on me. You know, we don't gossip here. We're just concerned. He said, I'm going to tell you something. usually when you stop acting on any defective character, God takes it, removes it, and transforms your mind and frees you of it. But for some reason, that's not happened to you. Oh, what's the name's gone back down to the valley? You go over and lock yourself in that apartment. Don't you call us. Don't you call me. We're sick and tired of hearing about it. See, that can't ever make up their mind. One time, it's call them all the time, and I don't call them at all. So I went over and locked myself up in that apartment, and I prayed, cried, cussed all day long. And about 11, 12 o'clock at night, I went to sleep. And the next morning, that thing was gone. They were so smart, I didn't even tell them. After the fourth meeting, fourth day, I was in the little ice, we was all eating ice cream. And I said, well, I guess I might as well tell y'all. They said, oh, we knew it the first night. I said, why didn't you tell me? He said, well, you need to know that you're going to always be the last to know. I said, why is that? He said, we don't know. Well, after me and old what's-her-name had nothing, you know how to get sick, make something out of nothing. We got a divorce, and I married a Southern Sunday school teaching, singing in the choir, civilian Baptist. Now, there's no way for that not to work. Didn't. Then, I'm never going to marry again. Found a girl who was never going to marry again or shack up, which I didn't go for that too much, but there's no way for this to even think that we'd ever be together. Girl's a little younger than I am, but so is everybody, most all other women. She's a Catholic. You know that I know and my grandmother knows that Baptists and Catholics cannot even associate, let alone marry. She's a Yankee and I'm a Texan. And she's Al-Anon, which was in our favor. And I've had the best 6.5 years I've ever had in my life. I still am afraid she's going to find out, but she hasn't so far. But I finally have. That is what people talk about. I'm even glad to go home now. Haven't ever been before. Wouldn't you have hated to miss it? What if we'd have missed it? Isn't that amazing? We're the people who found it and wasn't even looking for it. Remember that bumper sticker? Said we found it. Well, we've got it. Except we can't make any bumper stickers. Isn't that terrible? Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? You and I did exactly what God's people have to do to really know God. You know what you got? Baptists said it all the time. They just didn't know how to do it. They said, I'm nothing but filthy rags except what God is in me. And you know what happened there? We did it. We lived to the experience of becoming nothing. It's an awful feeling. People are not going to live down there. They're not going to go to that. But you and I did, didn't we? You and I went to the place that God's children must go to really know Him. You and I lived to the experience of becoming nothing. You and I and the people who lived with us became helpless. You and I gave everything we could to become sufficient. And God's children must be insufficient and know themselves to be, or they can't know Him. And you and I did that. See, what we were doing didn't have anything to do with what we were doing, did it? So you never knew what you were doing. You thought you was out there getting educated, learning jobs, having children, getting married, having marriages. That wasn't what you was doing. You was getting ready to go where God wanted you to go. Where? To Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all you were doing. So what you were doing was never what you thought you were doing. And what was going on was never what you thought was going on. So after you get here, what's going on and what you think's going on is not what's going on. Because nobody knows where they're going after they get here, because they don't know how in the hell they got here. So how are you going to know where you're going after you get here? You're not. Because you're never going to know how you're going to be, because you're not going to be the way you are. You're going to be the way you're later that you've never been. So how are you going to know how that is? Well, you can't, because you've never been like that. how you know how you're going to be? How are you going to have what you're supposed to have if you don't know what you're going to have to be to have it? And you can't be what you want to be because you don't know what it is. We're trapped. Here people live on faith. You and I don't have a choice. Because where we're going, how'd you know? Did you know that? How did you get here? Who was here when you got here? Did you arrange somebody to be here when you got here? Did you learn how to be when you got here? You know how to do anything? No. You know how to be with anybody? No. Hell no. Been with anybody? Yeah, but didn't know how. How'd it work? Very badly. Isn't it amazing? God said, my children do not fit in the world. And you and I tried everything we could to fit in the world and do things the worldly way. God's children are not allowed for things to work out the worldly way. And God's children are not to fit in this kingdom. He's going to create a kingdom like he promised just for his children. And what did he do? Hell, we're in it. Here we are. Right here. Isn't that amazing? He said, I've got to have some kids that'll do what I want them to do. That joke about the little child, bunch of crap. That's us. We're there. God says, you must come to me as a little child. Well, we're there. We're prepared. Isn't it great that I've now got a father that I never knew I had? And that he's the father, not these other fathers. You only got one. That's him. That's ours. And we got him. And I'm a little child. I can go to him. Can't you? Damn right you can. You ever get scared? Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? You're supposed to. You and I have done everything up through today just exactly like we were supposed to. We're going to go through the stuff, baby. You know why? Because God needs us to go through the stuff. God's going to take us through some stuff because he's placed us in the place where he can now transform my life and yours into his exact image as he promised. And you and I are there. We could never do it before. We wanted to and couldn't do it because God says, I want to do it. I have to do it for my children because they don't know how to do it nor what they are to be. But I can do it, and I'll get them in the place where I can transform their lives and let them be in my image. And in turn, I'm going to need them to do what I need them to do. And 90% of the time, they'll never know what I'm doing with them. But I'm going to get them in the place that I create. I want to get them in a place that they could not create. And I'm going to get them to live a life that they're not even going to know that they're living most of the time. And I'm going to put them in that life so I can transform them into my image and give them life. And that's what he's doing with you and I. And he's got a place for us just like he made right here. And he's got a place for us for the rest of our days here and hereafter. If there's any group of people that God's ahead of and chose, it's you and I. I don't know when he chose. I know he did. Maybe before we were born or after. I don't know. But I know without a shadow of doubt that all the things that God has said about his people, it's about us. Maybe others too. I don't know. Probably. But I know ours is different and ours is the way for us. And that he chose us, placed us in the place that he wanted us to be, so that he could accomplish all the things that he promised. And he shows every one of us the way. We're directed when we don't know we're directed. He's our God and our Father. And we now live in a power that only his chosen people live in. No one else has it. I could have gone to 10 different denominations and 1,000 different churches, but my life was never to be any different until God sent me to be with you and you to be with me. You see, he sent us to be together. He brought us from every. He did not leave out one. We are now in a kingdom that has been formed by God himself. Some of us are going to turn it down. And thank God I stayed here as long as I have. Thank God I stayed here long enough that God could start being my God and my Father. And that I could go down the sidewalk that he's chosen for me, just like he's chosen for you. We're going to get some flack, but you and I have the sidewalk now to go on. Try not to get diverted any more than we have to. Stay on that sidewalk, because we now live in that one power that only God's children have. Nobody else has it. And it wins over everything. It's that one power that never fails us. When we invite that power into the day, when we invite it into our life that day, when we call another human being, and when we meet together, that power never fails us. Just like it's been here this weekend, and just like it is right now, when I can feel you loving me and me loving you. Thank you very much.